for even tragedies, don't we? Because they give us the ability to trust God even more fully. They enable us to have a testimony to a world that would want to crumble, that would want to shake their fist at God, that would want to get even, that would want to take revenge. We live in a world where sometimes we don't quite understand the big picture of what God is trying to do through life situations. And that's really been the focus of this little series in Ruth. That's really been the centerpiece of this little series, has been how God can take our brokenness, the broken pieces, the hurts, the pains, the setbacks, and how God can take those and restore something to beauty and to something that is wonderful and a masterpiece that he's putting together. And I've been saying all through this series, perhaps you're facing a setback. Perhaps you're facing dark days, hard times. Perhaps you're in a place where you never thought you would be. You never thought in a million years you could be where you're at. You had dreams for your life. You had direction. You had those passions. And yet, here you are, and you're experiencing some troubling days. We want to be reminded that God has a master plan, and he's developing a masterpiece, and you're a part of it. And so in this little book of Ruth, we've been learning those principles, and if you've missed any of them, you can go to our website, and you can go back, and you can listen to these messages. This is the fifth one, and I'm so thankful for Haley Taylor. You might not know this, but Haley is now our person in putting all these sermons into our website. And so when you see Haley, really give her thanks for that ministry. Haley, really, we do thank you for doing that. Every Sunday afternoon, she'll take these messages and she'll upload them to our website. So go into those if you've missed any of them. But we've been talking about, you know, how the journey of life is not like a interstate highway from Eugene to Portland, where it's just kind of a straight shot. It's more like the drive from here to Bend, Oregon. You got a lot of twists, you got a lot of turns, you got a lot of issues you have to navigate through. You've got slippery roads, you've got steep cliffs, you have boulders and the mudslides. You have it all on that journey. You have wild animals from time to time that can cause havoc. And so that's the journey of life. And you know, for some people, life just seems to be kind of flowing fairly smoothly. There are some people, many people, who often say, well, I'm really not familiar with that kind of life. It feels like my life is just kind of on a straight shot, and I've just been blessed, and everything's gone my way, and, you know, great. Praise the Lord for you. But we need to be reminded that all it takes is one tragedy, one moment, one loss of breath, a loss of life, change in our job, change in our health, anything that can all of a sudden steer us off that path. And then what do? Do we fall apart? Do we break down? Or do we shake our fist at God and say, God, how could you allow this to happen to me? That's a fairly common response. So how do we respond to those things? Well, this little story of Ruth helps us out in that way. And so, in chapter 1, just a recap real quickly, for those of you that are just here for the first time, in chapter 1 of Ruth, we start out with a family, a great family, husband, wife, two young boys, and a famine is in the land. They decide to go to the land of Moab, and while they're there, in the midst of their enemies, for Moab was enemy territory, here they are. And all of a sudden, a lady by the name of Naomi loses her husband. He passes away. And then a few years later, her two sons also die. And she's left with her two daughter-in-laws. And so now we have what started out as a family of four taking a journey. All of a sudden, now we have three women grieving together, widows. And when you're a widow and you have no She's telling them, you know, stay here. I've got to go back to my homeland, but you stay here. Try to figure out a way to survive. Find husbands if you can. And there's a real tender period there where they're grieving together. But Ruth, thank the Lord for little Ruth. Ruth looks at Naomi, her mother-in-law, and says, I'm going to go with you. Where you go, I will go. Your God, I will serve. And it's a touching scene. And so together they walk back to Bethlehem, where the story began. And they come to Bethlehem, and the ladies of the town look at Naomi. They don't even recognize her anymore. She was once a lady who was vibrant and had a glow to her face. And she was a friend to everyone. And her name means pleasant. And she was a pleasant lady to be around. But now she walks back into Bethlehem. And instead of being named Naomi, she says, call me Mara, because I am a bitter person. I'm bitter. And she is bitter at God. She's bitter at life. She's struggling. She's depressed because of the setbacks and the things that have occurred in her life. And that's chapter 1. And then we get to chapter 2, and there's a glimmer of hope. Because as these two women, Ruth and Naomi, are back in their home, there they are sitting in their home, and Ruth says to her mother-in-law, she says, I think I'm going to go out into the fields. We've got to have food. We've got to do something. And so Naomi gives her a blessing, and Ruth heads out into the fields, and she's heading down the road, and she doesn't know where to go. She doesn't have any direction at all in life. She just picks a field because she knows in the field there might be some gleaning, some might be some leftover wheat along the edges, because you see, the landowners were commanded by God, make sure you leave wheat around the edges of your fields for the poor and for the foreigners to take and eat. And lo and behold, she finds a field, and she begins to glean and pick up the leftover wheat. And there in that field is the owner of the field, a young man by the name of Boaz. And Boaz is out there, and his servants honor him and love him and appreciate him because he is a godly man. But Boaz takes a look out into his field, and there, lo and behold, he sees Ruth, this Moabitess lady, and he has heard about her, but he's intrigued by her. And all of a sudden, we begin to see something begin to merge and happen, because Boaz takes compassion on her, and Boaz begins to protect her, and he wants to take her under his wing and care for her. So he makes sure she's taken care of as a foreigner and as a widow and as a poor person. He has a tenderness in his heart for her. We also believe he also is very interested in her and maybe has a desire to get to know her better and wants to know about her life and so forth. And so he takes her under his wing, and then of course Ruth comes back from the field and tells her mother-in-law Naomi, I met a man, his name is Boaz. And all of a sudden, Naomi's eyes get as big as saucers, and she said, you met Boaz? And all of a sudden, Naomi is reminded, Boaz is our kinsman redeemer. Boaz is the one person in our family line who has the ability to redeem us back, who has the ability to buy our land and take us under his shelter. He's the one man who could possibly take you under his wing and become your husband, Ruth. And so this whole idea of the kinsman redeemer is a beautiful part of this story of Ruth. As a matter of fact, it is the central part about Boaz being the kinsman redeemer who is able to step into their lives when they have no one and to redeem the back of land and provide hope in a hopeless situation. And so that's chapter 2. And chapter 3, it even gets more exciting because now that there is interest and there is an intrigue happening. All of a sudden in chapter 3, Naomi says to Ruth, Ruth, you need to get yourself all prettied up. You need to put on your prettiest dress. You need to put on your perfume. And what you need to do is you need to go up to the threshing floor. You need to go where the celebration is occurring around the grain, the new grain that's come. And the wheat has now been threshed. The grain is on the floor. The men are up there. Boaz is up there. Go up to the celebration. And so Ruth goes up, and Naomi tells her, when you get up there, Naomi, make sure you find where Boaz is sleeping. And when you see where Boaz is sleeping in the middle of the night, Ruth, you go and you lay down at the foot of Boaz's feet. And a lot of people read that and say, oh, there's some kind of a sexual, you know, weirdness going on. There's no sexual weirdness at all. This is a common practice oftentimes in the day, and even still is today in many cultures. But there was nothing sexual about this. It was Ruth's right to go sit at his feet and then call out to Boaz and say, Boaz, will you bring me under your covering, and will you become my kinsman redeemer, our kinsman redeemer? And so lo and behold, she goes, she lays at his feet in the middle of the night. Maybe she tickled his feet, we don't know. Maybe she grabbed the covers off of him, we don't know. But he reaches down and he feels this lady down there, and he's startled, and she declares to him, you know, I'm asking for you to cover me and to take and become our kinsman redeemer. And so Ruth looks at her, and with tenderness, he begins to compliment her and thank her and remind her. She could have gone to any other men in the village. She could have gone to any of them. They probably would have taken her and been responsive to her, but instead she came to him. And so he's now reminding her how precious that is, how precious she is, and how much the townspeople love her. And then all of a sudden we find chapter 3, another setback, because Boaz says to Ruth, I would love to be your kinsman redeemer, but there's a kin that's closer than I am. There is one in the family that is closer to you. He should be your kinsman redeemer. He's a closer kin than I am. And all of a sudden, all of us as readers, we just groan in our heart because we want so badly for Boaz to be the redeemer, because the whole story is building, and this love story is happening before our eyes. But now Boaz says, but I have to go, and I have to talk to this nearest kin of yours, and I have to see what he will say. And so Ruth comes back to Naomi, and she tells Naomi all of what's transpired. And Naomi says, let's just trust Boaz. Let's just trust him, because he will do what's right. So all through the story of Ruth, you have several storylines going on. You have the story of heartbrokenness and bitterness and struggle and pain. On the other hand, you have the story of this kinsman redeemer who is there, standing ready to respond. And it's a beautiful picture. It's a type of Jesus Christ. When we look at Boaz in the book of Ruth, we are given an Old Testament picture, a type of who Jesus Christ is and what he did coming into our world and providing for us when we were lost in sin and we had no direction for our life. Jesus Christ reached down and he loved us and he died for us and he provided for us redemption from our sin. It's a beautiful story. But now we come to chapter 4, and it's even more interesting as we look at how this story continues to unfold. And all along I've just been saying, maybe you are in a series of setbacks and struggles. Maybe you've become bitter at God. Maybe you've been questioning whether or not there is a God after what you've been through. Maybe you're beginning to just question, can I really even trust God anymore? Well, this story continues to unfold for us. And so let's see what happens in chapter 4. And I'm going to read through just the whole chapter, and then I'm going to come back and we're going to make some comments about it. And so if you have your Bibles ready, let's just begin reading at verse 1. Meanwhile, Boaz went up to the town gate and he sat there. And when the kinsman redeemer he had mentioned came along, Boaz said, come over here, my friend, and sit down. So he went over and they sat down. Boaz took 10 of the elders of the town, and he said, sit here. And they did so. And then he said to the kinsman redeemer, Naomi, who has come back from Moab, is selling the piece of land that belonged to our brother Elimelech. And I thought I should bring the matter to your attention and suggest that you buy it in the presence of these seated here and in the presence of the elders of my people. If you will redeem it, do so. But if you will not, tell me, so I will know, for no one has the right to do it except you, and I'm next in line. The man said, I will redeem it. Boaz said, well, on the day that you buy the land from Naomi and from Ruth the Moabitess, in order to maintain the name of the dead with his property. And at this, the kinsman redeemer said, well, then I cannot redeem it because I might endanger my own estate. You redeem it yourself. I cannot do it. And now in earlier times in Israel, for the redemption and transfer of property to become final, one party took off his sandal and they gave it to the other. And this was the method of legalizing transactions in Israel. So the kinsman redeemer said to Boaz, buy it yourself. And he removed his sandal. And then Boaz announced to the elders and all the people, today you are witnesses that I have bought from Naomi all the property of Elimelech, Chilion, and Mahlon. I have also acquired Ruth, the Moabitess, Mahlon's widow, as my wife, in order to maintain the name of the dead with his property, so that his name will not disappear from his family or from the town records. Today you are witnesses. And then the elders and all those at the gate said, we are witnesses. May the Lord make the woman who is coming into your home like Rachel and Leah, who together built up the house of Israel. May you have standing in Ephrathah and be famous in Bethlehem. Through the offspring the Lord gives you by this young widow, may your family be like that of Perez, whom Tamar bore to Judah. So Boaz took Ruth. She became his wife. He went into her, and the Lord enabled her to conceive, and she gave birth to a son. And the women said to Naomi, praise to the Lord, who this day has not left you without a kinsman redeemer. May he become famous throughout Israel. He will renew your life, sustain you in your old age. For your daughter-in-law, who loves you and who is better to you than seven sons, has given him birth. And then Naomi took the child, laid him in her lap, and she cared for him. And the women living there said, Naomi has a son. And they named him Obed. He was the father of Jesse, the father of David. This then is the family line of Perez. Perez was the father of Hezron. Hezron, the father of Ram. Ram, the father of Abinadab. Abinadab, the father of Nashon. Nashon, the father of Salmon. Salmon, the father of Boaz. Boaz, the father of Obed. Obed, the father of Jesse. And Jesse, the father of David. Boaz says, on the day that you buy this land, now the land is very kind of, he didn't give the name, he just says, you're going to take this Moabite woman, the dead man's widow, and in order to maintain the name of the dead with his property, you're going to have to take this, and it's almost like you're going to have to take this baggage into your own life, into your own family. Here we find something rather interesting to take place. I'm going to get my notes here in order. Boaz puts a spin on the situation. And the man says, I'm not going to do this. And we don't know what is occurring in this man's life. We don't know if he's married or not. We assume he probably is. But he realizes that if he has to bring another woman into his home, if he has to marry Ruth, if he's going to now take this property and eventually it's going to be in Ruth's name and not his own, he's realizing this could really complicate my own life. And so the Bible tells us that he says, you take her. You take her. Boaz isn't trying to be deceptive. He's not trying to deceive the man. He's being very upfront. He's being very honest with him. But what we do find out here is that now Boaz can claim Ruth as his own. Boaz can take the land and make it and keep it in the family. And then notice what happens next. We see that he takes her. She gives birth to a child. For 10 years, she's been barren. She couldn't have a child with Mahlon. And so the scene is exciting in the sense that all of a sudden, everything is moving towards a climax. And Boaz is now redeeming Ruth, redeeming Naomi, redeeming the land. Notice that the people are getting excited. Notice that the people are gathering around Naomi as she holds that little baby in her arms. And what do? They remind her, God has given you a kinsman redeemer. They remind her of the wonderful daughter-in-law that God gave her. And it's rather interesting that as she's holding the child, notice they don't say Ruth has a son. They say Naomi has a son. And they remind her of what she had said back in chapter 1, 21. When she came back into the town, she said to everybody, the Lord has brought me back empty. The Lord has brought me back empty. Now, they're saying, look at what the Lord has brought you. He has brought you a son. They're reminding Naomi of the goodness of God, the grace of God. These women were giving praise to God. They're reaffirming to Naomi, there were days that you felt that God had abandoned you and that you were left with nothing, but in reality, our God has had a plan all along. Naomi, he has met your deepest longings. Ruth, God brought Ruth into your life. God brought Boaz into your life. God brought all of the pieces of the puzzle into your life. And what wonderful changes came into Naomi's and Ruth's life because they trusted Boaz. They let him work on their behalf. They went from loneliness to love. They went from toil to rest. They went from poverty to wealth. They went from worry to assurance. They went from despair to hope. And Naomi was no longer Mara, a bitter woman. And Ruth was no longer just Ruth the Moabitess. The past was gone, and they both had a new beginning. But I want to say to you, if that's all we get out of this story, this story, if all it is a story about a woman going from bitterness and heartache to having a child on her lap and feeling like her life is now full, if that's all the story is, well, a lot of people live that kind of life. A lot of people see those kinds of things happen, but a lot of people don't. A lot of people don't experience the child on the lap and the praise of the women and the glory of the whole situation. We see a story unfold, but what we've got to see beyond this little storyline is what follows. Because you see, what follows is the bigger picture. You see, Ruth and Naomi, never in their wildest imagination would they have ever known that they are part of a chain of events. A chain of events that are absolutely changing the world. They are part, and the writer, it's almost like the writer says, okay, now I've given you a story of the culture and a little bit of history of what was going on in the days of Ruth and Naomi. But now I want to remind you, there's a bigger picture going on. And that's why we have this amazing lineage laid out for us here at the end of the book. This writer obviously was writing from years later, looking back on these terrible days in the life of Israel, but this writer picked out this precious little story, but it's not the storyline that we focus on. It's not the ups and downs and the setbacks. It's the picture that God was putting a mosaic together, a masterpiece together that none of the actors in the story could have ever imagined. And I want to say to you this morning, what we need to pull from this book and be reminded from this book is that you are part of a bigger story than you can ever imagine. You are part of something more amazing, more wonderful that's happening throughout the history. And when we say history, we say His story, because history is His story. And God is putting you right where you at, right where you're at, right here in Monmouth. Whether you're a young mother, whether you're a businessman, whether you're single, whether you've got a household of kids, whether wherever you are in your job, you're not an accident. You're not just some little blip on this history line of this eternal line of action in this world. You have a place. You have a part. God is putting something together for you. God is putting a love story in your story. And I've said that every week that we've been in this series. You know, we can allow our situations to cause us to have tunnel vision. We can allow our current setbacks, our current struggles, to all of a sudden be the name of our life. We can say that, you know, I'm struggling. You can say right now, my life is just struggle. But really, is that how you're going to identify your life, as just struggle? Or can you understand and see that God wants to, through you and working through you, produce something amazing? It's kind of like, you know, when you're driving along and you're taking a vacation maybe with the family and the kids, and you're sitting up front, your wife or husband sitting up front, the kids are sitting in the back, and you're driving through this amazing, beautiful scenery. The trees and the mountains and the streams are so glorious, and you're just soaking it in, and you want to say to your kids, kids, look at the glory around, look at the beauty around us, look at these mountains, look how gorgeous it is. And you turn your head and you look back and you find that your son or your daughter is looking at their iPhone. Or they're playing on their game player. They're doing their video games. Their head's down this way. And you look back and you say, kid, look around you. But we don't want to look around. We want to deal with our video game. We want to see what's going on our social media. We want to focus here. And you see, sometimes we do that in life. We get focused on the trivial, we get focused on the things that are happening now, and we lose perspective of the beauty and the glory and the grandeur and the masterpiece that God is creating around us. And in it, it's true. to carry on a heritage. You're doing things on the job, and you think it's mundane, and you think it doesn't make any difference in the world. You may be a fisherman in Alaska. You may be a city worker for the city of Monmouth. You may be working for the Department of Fish and Wildlife. You may be driving a truck. You may be a police officer. You may be a church secretary. Whatever you're doing, you may look at your life and you may say, but my little piece doesn't really make a difference in the big scheme of things. In God's picture, it is immense and it's amazing. And you're changing lives. You're making a difference. And you will for all of eternity. If we can see that and go away with that, then I think we've picked and understood the, picked up and understood the picture of what the writer of Ruth is trying to remind us. The picture is so much bigger than us and our situations. Now that does not, don't hear me say, that does not mean that your situation is not a hardship and a struggle. I don't want to minimize in any way what you're going through. Because I know for you, whatever you're dealing with right now, or what you're thinking, or you're on the precipice, I don't want to minimize the importance of that in your life. But I do just this morning, I want to give you perspective and remind you that God is at work. And we have a Redeemer. We have a Redeemer. And we have one who loved us enough to come to this world to die for us and save us and take us to the place one day where we'll spend eternity with him. So we are on a journey. It's not a circle. It's a straight line, and we've got a destiny, and we've got an eternity with our Savior. And maybe then, maybe only then, God will pull us aside and say, you know why I allowed you to go through that struggle? Do you know why I allowed you to experience that pain or that period of your life? And then we're going to see. And the scale will be pulled back, and we'll understand what's been going on. God has a plan for you. And this morning, I'm just going to end this message by giving any of you an invitation. If you would like to come, if you're at a hardship, if you're at a crossroad in your life, and you're not quite sure what step you need to take next, again, I don't want to minimize it.